From WPST and the Music Post, it's our spin-off program, Post Serial. One story told in 12 segments, though 9 would probably suffice. It's the twisted, undignified tale of the Christmas carol Hark the Herald Angels Sing. I'm Sam Post. Our mystery turns on the whereabouts of Felix Mendelssohn during a crucial 21-minute window on the afternoon of January 13th, 1840. Was he composing diligently in the library, like Clara Schumann says? Or was he off trying to get into Bach's car so he could steal Bach's music, like Brahms alleges? I spent all of the past year investigating this question, though, as you'll see, it's entirely irrelevant to our story. But was Mendelssohn even capable of this crime? Was he some psychopath who would steal Bach's ideas after they had had such a cordial musical relationship? Everything you'll hear can be interpreted to support either side, and in the end, I'll come to no conclusions whatsoever. Stay with me. Okay, so if you didn't listen to the podcast serial over the past few months, you should probably just ignore that opening. I apologize for the confusion. But the story behind this Christmas carol, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, is actually pretty interesting, with these twists and turns, some of which I hinted at there a little bit. Today I'll be sharing that story with you, and sharing a piece that I wrote inspired by this Christmas carol. Now don't worry, my piece is not related to the serial theme music, though I do hope you heard what I did there. In addition, we're adding a dueling pianos element to the mix today. Later in the program, I'll have back on the show my colleague Ralitza Pacheva, whom you'll recall from episode 3. We'll each be playing this piece for you, and you'll hear too how very differently we play it. And then hopefully having her talk about this piece will lend some more credibility to the process than just hearing me go on about it, which I might a little bit anyway. And it'll be an interesting peek into this relationship between the performer and the composer. I just hope she has good things to say. And as usual, we'll save the best for last. This time for real, stay with me. The music for Hark the Herald Angels Sing, which maybe, like me, you know best as that piece that Janie plays over and over on the piano toward the end of the movie It's a Wonderful Life, was actually written by this 19th century composer Felix Mendelssohn. And this is why it's so beautiful, I think, more so than most Christmas music, because he was a great composer. He didn't write it for Christmas, though, but rather for this random festival celebrating Gutenberg's invention of the printing press in 1840. So his lyrics are all about how Gutenberg helped the German people see the light, somewhat strange to hear in light of the occasion and words that we're used to now. And he wrote this piece for a pretty strange combination, men's chorus plus brass orchestra, and it was never published in his lifetime, may have only been performed a single time at that festival, and even beyond that, it seems that no recordings even exist of this original version, because I tried pretty hard to find one and was unsuccessful, and I like to think I know how to use the internet. So instead, I'll play for you Mendelssohn's score, a reduction on the piano, try to imagine a bunch of men singing, though I might embarrass myself and chime in, especially in this place where you're used to hearing joyful nations, all ye rise. In this version, the words are Gutenberg der Deutsche Mann, Gutenberg the German man, or Gutenberg der große Mann, Gutenberg the great man, which I think is kind of funny. There are some subtle but significant differences you'll hear between this original and the music you know from the Christmas carol today, and even this extra phrase that I didn't know existed until I found the score a couple days ago. Mostly, though, you'll recognize what you hear. Very beautiful, a couple of gorgeous harmonies. This harmony is so nice. Hear the clash dissonance between the bass note C and the note they're singing here, D. Well, they're not actually singing, but you hear it on the piano. Rhythmic difference from the Christmas carol. Now here we are at You may find this hard to believe, but I was once accepted into my college glee club as a tenor, but I declined the offer. Okay, moving on. Thank you. part that was new to me. So Mendelssohn wrote this piece in 1840, and then 15 years later, this guy William Cummings, this English guy, adapted the words from another church hymn, which was written around 1740 by Charles Wesley, which we know today as Christ the Lord is Risen Today, for the music for this Christmas carol. And for a while, I thought the story ended there, but like so many musical stories, this one can be traced back even further to Bach. Let me play you again just the opening phrase of this Christmas carol transposed to a new key, and then I'll play for you the first phrase from the Gavotte of Bach's Orchestral Suite No. 4. You may hear a striking similarity. Now listen to the Bach. Suspiciously similar, wouldn't you say? The Bach is much more energetic, there's more notes, more movement, but the harmonies, the melody, the outline are essentially the same. At the same time, I think this is just another example of a composer taking something from a previous composer and modifying it, readapting it for a different purpose. So, you know, despite my dramatic introduction to this episode, nothing pernicious going on here. It's just very common in the classical music world for composers to do this, whether it's in the form of variations or in a more subtle form like this. Now I'm going to play for you my piece, which in the same spirit expands on this music that we get from Mendelssohn, quite a bit in this case, and keep your ears out for the tune because it comes back in lots of different forms and fragments, but always surrounded by different stuff, different moods. Sometimes just the beginning of it in the right hand. And then sometimes it's in the left hand, a different mood, minor, so here. Sometimes just the second part of the melody, this. For instance, so all kinds of fragments and combinations like this. And then in the second half of the piece, it gets changed into a dance rhythm, with six beats, so instead of, we get, and this part's also a fugue. You guys, most of you know what a fugue is from previous episodes, so here comes the second voice. Here comes the third, down here. And this little flourish, which is another addition to this melody here, becomes increasingly important as this fugue progresses. Watch out for that as well. Well, listen for it, I should say. Here it is now in full. Thank you. That was a recording I made a little over a year ago now. And I suppose it's one of the many curses of being a musician, aside from the obvious one of poverty. But lots of things in my playing, when I hear them now, really bug me. And not about the piece, but about the playing. And Ralitza does such a better job with most of them. There's one place now, having heard and recorded Ralitza already for this podcast, that I think neither of us really nails. And so I want to just explain, right before the end, you know, we've had this long section that I mentioned in this dance rhythm, 6-8, 1-2-3-4-5-6, 1-2-3-4-5-6, 1-2-3-4-5-6. And then there's this part right before the end that's supposed to go back to four beats. 1-2-3-4-1-2-3. This way, instead of, which I think lends to this feeling of halting and makes it a little more triumphant. And what bugs me about the way I played it is that these rising flourishes in the left hand, these four notes, line up with the melody notes on the right hand this way. Whereas I think they would be much better not quite lining up this way. Sounds like a very subtle, small difference, but I think it makes a big difference when you play it faster. So it would be more like this. Back to triple meter one more time for that last fast section. Ralitza and I talked for quite some time about this piece and her playing it, so I'm just going to play some snippets from that conversation, starting with her general thoughts on the piece.
Because it speaks out to performers, it's really interesting to play, it's really well crafted, it's very difficult at times though, because you write really intense polyphony.
She means music of independent parts or voices, like we learned about with Bach.
And at the same time, the people in the audience really love it, and they kind of see that it's related to something that they've heard, the tune that they know. And at the same time, there are things happening to this tune that no one ever has done. So
later I asked Ralitza about the differences in how we play this piece, and I'm not going to play you the question, it was a little bit of bumbling in there, but what I meant to say was something like this. Most people tend to think of composers as the ultimate authority on their own music, but I think that's a really misguided assumption, because performers are so creative, and, you know, in addition to places where Ralitza just executes the performance more skillfully than I can, there are also these places where she brings out things that I never imagined, never heard, even in my own music. And even in the places where I might prefer my own interpretation, my own vision, I appreciate her alternative take. Here's some of her take on that.
When I first got my hands on the score, you know, because when I heard you play it, it was just like, I was like, oh, that's so beautiful. And then when I got the music, it was very interesting how I went through different stages of playing it. At first, it's so saturated with like really nice harmonies that I wanted to show every single beautiful harmony there was. So like, I think the first time I played it for you, I played it really slow.
Yes, right? I remember that.
Because it was, you know, it was just like, oh, that's so beautiful. Oh, and that's so beautiful. And that's so beautiful. You know, and it was like every single thing had something to say. Not only it was beautiful, you know, just beautiful, but it had, for me, the way you choose to harmonize this very familiar and very beautiful melody, which already has a beautiful harmony written by Mendelssohn, but what you do with it is that you suddenly put in there all these different moods. When I think of people singing Christmas carols, there seems to be kind of a unifying mood, you know, like a big group of people is singing one song and they are all kind of thinking similar things. And then when you harmonize it the way you have, it's almost like you get peek into the individual minds of the people who are singing. So you actually get these different moods swimming through the group, which is really wonderful. I like that. And
that's very interesting.
For example, this... You know, that harmony, I would just go, like, how do I do that? You know, how do I... and as I...
She even took that question in a different direction. Later, she unexpectedly switched the interview around a little bit and started asking me questions.
How do you see all these polyphonic possibilities in there? Like, how do you... Does it just come naturally to you? Do you discover it through improvisation, or do you sit down and think about it?
I remember, oftentimes I notice, I'll just think about a piece and then I'll think, oh, that works well in canon, which this one does, and mm-hmm. It was the same with Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Mm-hmm. You just hear all of a sudden, oh my god, that mm-hmm. works well with the voices staggered. And of course, in the original, that never happened. So I think, you know, someone has to take advantage of this fact. Otherwise, it's just being wasted on the universe, this beautiful melody that works well in canon.
Well, clearly we thought that was hilarious, but what I mean is that the melody works with these staggered entrances this way. Which I use a lot in the second half of this piece, and then even at the very end, I stagger them more closely in time. In that case, they're in the middle voices. It's right at the very end altogether. It sounds like this. Here's another one of her reactions to the piece.
As I played it for you a couple of times and you spoke about it to me, and also when we worked on the Bach together, you occasionally use the expression about a harmony where it's like the sun comes out, and I now see that in your music you like to do things like this. You have sunny harmonies.
I think what she's talking about is one of these moments where there are these quick shifts back and forth, and we hear these fragments of the melody, but it's all very dark and minor, and then all of a sudden there's this major entrance which stays with us for a while, and it's very sunny. So you'll hear, and then that point is where the sun comes up. And here's the sun. But then the clouds come back, and so on. And then there's another one like that later on toward in the second half of the piece. And this one also uses those staggered entrances, those canons or stretto entrances of the main theme. You'll hear, and then here, and then here, and then again, and then finally. So five of them, again, coming out of this very different Stormy character. Onto something different. Back to Ralita again.
I really like what you do at the end, because this, you know, when you switch into the 6-8 after a really huge and wonderful build-up with a pedal point, which I really love, and it's always very difficult
to
for
play,
me to play.
Because people don't know what you mean possibly by pedal point.
Pedal point means that there is a harmony which is, or there's
sustained.
A note. And on top of it, a lot of things are going on, and there are all kinds of harmonies that pass over it, but this stays there and creates this enormous tension that finally then brings in one of the most climatic statements.
Why don't you
theme.
Just play the...
So
this is the kind of building up to the first climax, or what seems like a climax, but turns out it's just the first in a series of climaxes, maybe?
Is this one?
Yeah, don't you think? Maybe not. Back, mm-hmm. although that with in four voices this time, with running eighth notes too.
And I love how very often you put the melody, those, you know, quotes of the melody in between voices in the middle. It's again not easy to do, but it's just so wonderful when it happens right in between. You know, not just at the top, or And then I think you're doing some kind of...
Like I said, our conversation was pretty long, but like you, maybe at this point, I'm very excited to listen to her play it again. So let's do that.
Thank you.
as you can see, we attracted some fans there. That's it for the show. Thanks for listening. We'll take a few week break now for the holidays. I'll stop barraging you with Christmas music that you have to listen to. Please let me know what you think. SamuelJPost@gmail.com or themusicpostpodcast@gmail.com. Have a great holiday. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the new year on The Music Post.